Hello and welcome once again to At the Table with Gail, the weekly programme where if you don't know what to cook, Gail comes up with some wonderful selections. Now, I'm Peter Fleming and it's my pleasure to host the show and introduce Gail. Hello, Gail. Good morning.
Hello, hello, hello. Now, today, because I live by the beach and this recipe that I've got sort of marries in with the beach, and it's steamed kahawai with silver beet and spaghetti. Now, I can tell you I've had fresh kahawai from the beach, probably hours old, and baked it in the oven with a basically egg wash and with garlic crumbs, you know, garlic crumb bread, and crumbed it up and then just put it in some tin foil, just drizzled a little bit of oil over, baked it on high for 10 minutes. That fish is beautiful. A lot of people don't like kahawai. They think it's sort of rubbish fish, but it's not.
What's it look like? Don't tell me a fish.
You're asking the wrong person. I'm sorry. It's a fish. It's slightly brown, if I can call that. It's not white fish.
And what sort of length would have been? Well, not one that you've caught.
Well, oh, that's nice, isn't it? I would say at least maybe 12 inches long. What's it? That, about that? Yeah, maybe
300 millimetres for
yeah,
the
Yeah, three
the
to
youth,
five.
The youth
3 to 5. 3 to 5.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
well,
and
that
I'm
sounds
not
like
sure.
a normal sort of fish.
That's
then.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And people don't... My wife always said that in Australia, mullet was known as the neighbour's fish.
Oh.
Because if you caught one, you gave the neighbours.
Well, a lot of people feel like that about kahawai too as well. So we've
fish.
Got the picture there.
Gotcha.
But as far as I'm concerned, I found this recipe and I thought, this looks lovely and I know what kahawai tastes like when it's, you know, cooked nicely. So we're going to start off with 4 tablespoons of olive oil, 3 cups of coarse fresh breadcrumbs, 3 cloves of garlic finely chopped, salt and freshly ground black pepper, 3 tablespoons of chopped parsley, and 700 grams of skinned boned kahawai fillets and the brown bits. And that's what they do have on them. I don't know whether a lot of fish do that, but they have that sort of brown bits on them, which probably doesn't look that appealing to the eye. And I know people do eat it, but I'm saying cut it off. But I'm not sure about other fish, whether they have the brown bits too, but we're going to trim them off. And a peel of half a lemon, finely diced, really finely diced. In fact, you could probably grate it off a lemon and, you know.
I would have thought it would be easier. Zest it.
Zest it, that's what I mean. Yeah, zest it. Yes, if you've got a, that's if you've got a zester, of course, Peter.
Well, everybody's got a zester and everybody's got scars to prove it. you gave me a recipe the other day and you said, and use fresh nutmeg if you've got it.
Yes.
So I did. Boy, those nutmeg grinders are dangerous things.
Oh, right, yes.
Would you scrape up and down with your fingers?
Oh, yeah, they are dangerous. Another dangerous item in the kitchen. 2 tablespoons of capers, 8 tablespoons extra now. This is extra oil, olive oil. 6 silver beet leaves sliced, you know, it says 3 centimetres thick, but I just think just, you know, slice it thick because you're actually slicing it again. Dropped into boiling water for 5 minutes, drained and cooled under cold water and then drained again. Squeeze dry and you're chopping it again. So, you know, you're just making the fast lane to dropping it in the boiling water first. 4 spring onions sliced. And 500 grams of spaghetti. I know a lot of people sort of think, when I saw it and I thought, spaghetti, how does spaghetti go with fish? But anyway, I'm going to continue and I'll show Peter the picture that I've got once I've finished. It looks lovely. Heat the olive oil over a moderate heat and add the breadcrumbs and garlic. Fry, stirring constantly for around 10 minutes until the crumbs are crisp and golden. Remove from the heat and place in a large bowl. Season well and add the parsley. Mix well and reserve that to the side. Put the kahawai fillets on a plate. Sprinkle the peel and capers on top. Season well and drizzle 4 tablespoons of the olive oil that we had extra over them. Place in a steamer and steam for 10 minutes until just cooked. Now, if you haven't got a steamer, that's just a pot with a colander, basically, over the top with a lid on. That would be me. And meanwhile, heat the remaining oil in a frying pan and add the silver beet and spring onions, season well, and pan fry until hot. Not forgetting that the silver beet is actually cooked, so you're just pan frying it to heat it up. Boil the spaghetti in plenty of well-salted water until al dente. Drain and place in a large serving bowl. Add the silver beet and spring onions, the fish broken into bite-sized pieces, and its juice and the oil so it gets the lot. Mix gently and serve sprinkled with the breadcrumbs. And in this illustration, it does look lovely. An unusual combination, Peter.
I think so.
With the spaghetti. I don't think the silver beet, but basically, I'm just going to show you.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the picture looks really nice because the green silver beet stands out.
Well,
from
it does.
Sort
of anything green anyway on a dish really, sort of stands out. But the silver beet in this case does. But an unusual combination, but a lovely way to actually to do kahuai. Because, instead of just, egg washing it and pan frying it or something like that, this is just a real beautiful dish.
And you could use any old fish, can't you?
Oh, of course you could. Of course you could. But in this instance, this fish is, I know that they catch it a lot at our local beach.
Yeah, that always makes it much nicer because it's so fresh, isn't it?
Oh,
yeah.
And you were asking me about the colour. Well, I'm just having a quick glance at the description, and it has a grey-pink colour which darkens when cooked. So there you are.
Okay, all right.
So it's not particularly a white fish.
No. Well, that indicates it's probably got a bit more flavour than possibly it's got a bit of colour.
And it's got to be bled, of course, Peter. Any fish has got to be bled straight away when you catch it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not very nice.
Well, you assume that whoever's catching them does all
they
that.
They do that, before you get it. Yeah. So there you are. That's
good
our kahuai, and hope people enjoy that recipe. Quite different.
Yes, that's, as you say, with spaghetti, that is unusual. Mm. Right, okay, I shall put that in the cookbook, ready to do one day.
Right. Now, I thought that I would try these, because I like dates. I do like dates. And I saw this. This is quite an easy recipe, but it does look nice if you want to serve it out for a supper or, just put it out on a dinner party or something like that, or just do it. But basically, this is medjool dates with sticky rice. So if you like rice and you like dates, this is a winner for you. So we're going to start off with a half a cup of glutinous rice, 3/4 cup of boiling water, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 cup of coconut cream, 2 tablespoons of palm sugar. Now, I thought about this palm sugar and I thought to myself, I should look that up and see exactly what palm sugar is. But I'm picking that it's a sort of a finer brown sugar. I should have looked it up and had an explanation for that. But I just thought, well, raw sugar too as well would probably do, or a little bit of brown sugar. So maybe when I find out exactly what palm sugar is, I can get back to you. 16 medjool dates, 1/2 teaspoon of black sesame seeds, and that's really basically to make it look attractive at the end. So I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Peter, that we couldn't find any black sesame seeds. Plenty of the sort of pale brown ones.
Yes.
But haven't had any luck looking for the black ones. And of course, we want some lovely seasonal fruit to serve. So what we're doing for the method is placing the rice in a sieve and rinse well under cold water. Then place in a saucepan with the boiling water and salt and bring to the boil. Stir, cover, and reduce to a very low simmer. Now, this is cook undisturbed. That means you don't stir it or do anything for 12 minutes.
Now, Gail, what's the definition of glutinous rice? Do you buy it with it on the packet?
Well, I thought that, Peter, when I read this, because it said the glutinous rice, and then it's telling us to wash it really, really well. So really, you're probably washing a lot of that gluten off it if you're doing it well. But I'm not sure whether the short grain rice is better than the long grain rice. So short rice for me would be more glutinous than the...
I would have thought so, yeah.
Yeah, for desserts and, of course, your long rice for more savoury stuff. But you know, washing it several times, I just sort of thought, okay, is it still glutinous when you're actually cooking it? But anyway, you're cooking it undisturbed for 12 minutes. So make sure you have got it on a low simmer, though, because you'll be tempted to open it up just to see if it's burning or something. So, and then combine the coconut cream and the palm sugar in a saucepan and heat to dissolve the sugar. Stir in the cooked rice, cover, and leave to cool. Slice each date open lengthwise and remove the stone. So obviously, medjool dates must have stones in them. And whether you can use any other fancy dates, I'm sure, is fine. Fill the cavity with coconut rice and sprinkle with a few sesame seeds. Chill until needed and serve with fresh fruit. Now, these do look live. So 16 dates. So you're actually getting 2 dates each. And I'm just going to show Peter.
Oh, they look rather nice.
They look nice.
Well, obviously bite-sized, aren't they?
Well, they are bite-sized. Yeah. Do you like dates, Peter?
I do.
Oh, well, there you are.
Yeah, we always have some dates.
Yeah, it's that's a lovely recipe, and it's quite simple. So I am going to try that, whether I probably won't be, bring any in here, but I might just try it and see what it's like, because it does look lovely, and I love dates, and I love rice.
Now, I'm having a quick look about glutinous rice, and it looks like you just sort of buy it as... glutinous sushi rice.
Well, that would be glutinous.
Thai glutinous rice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think if we're looking specifically for glutinous rice, it might be a specialty.
Looking at this, that does look as if it might be. Yeah. Mm.
Does it give an explanation for palm sugar?
Oh, I haven't put that in yet. Glutinous rice, the maker's name, Natural Heaven, Pride of India, Tasty Bite, Himalayan Chef. Rice select, seeds of change. Oh, I don't know. So, yes, I think you have to possibly go to a...
From the illustration that I'm looking at, it looks like it is the short-grained rice anyway.
Yeah.
So, and I think basically once you cook it, glutinous rice is quite sticky, isn't it? Sort of like...
Well, it is.
Lumped
the whole
together.
Point. It's sticky rice, isn't
sticky
it?
Rice.
Yeah.
And I do like sticky rice.
And palm sugar is a sweetener derived from any variety of palm tree.
Oh.
Well, there's more to it than that.
But there you are. So that doesn't matter really too much about that.
Yeah.
So that's our lovely 2 recipes to start the day.
Can I tell you I'll tell you 2 things about sugar.
Okay.
If we've got time on the
program. Yes, we have.
Right. Well, the first one is that you and I are making things that you come up with. So that when I went away last week, my mission, which I chose to accept.
And it didn't explode when you opened it.
Was to have a bash at the roasted pears with cinnamon mascarpone.
Right.
Okay. And it's maple syrup. And brown sugar.
That's right.
And you just, the idea, preheat oven, place the pears.
Roasted them.
There was an experiment, really, because we'd got a couple of pears at home which would not ripen. They were as solid as the day they were picked off the tree, and they'd been sitting around for a couple of weeks. So interesting to see if baked they eased up. So I did this, and it wasn't until after I'd finished it I realised I'd misread that I just use ordinary sugar instead of brown sugar.
Oh,
so I don't think they caramelised as much as they should have done.
No.
But nevertheless, the interesting thing was that the pears did become edible. They were still quite hard.
Oh.
But having been baked for about 20 minutes, they did become.
Oh, good.
And then the mascarpone cheese with the cinnamon was nice.
Oh, great. Oh, well, there you are. That was that experiment.
My other quick story about sugar is we were on a bus somewhere going for, and the guide on the bus, we went past the sugar cane. And he said, not many people know this, but he said, sugar cane, you see, it's very tall stuff. And he said, at the top, it's very sort of fine fronds, which is where your icing sugar and stuff comes from. And as you move down, you then come to slightly coarser, which is caster sugar. And then you come to ordinary white sugar. And then right down at the bottom, Well, down the bottom, it's a bit where the rats and things all are. That's where those brown grains come from that you use for coffee. I thought that was rather clever.
Very clever, very clever. I was going to say, I've seen a lot of the sugar canes in Australia, and I thought to myself, I didn't know that. But anyway, and of course, I actually made the ricotta cheese and the banana honey and egg little hotcakes.
You did, and you showed them to me this morning. I've not tried one, but they look jolly nice.
Yes, and that was an easy recipe. That was good. Yeah, and they do taste nice, actually. They're a nice little quick one. Quite rich, really, but they're good. So I hope you enjoy tasting those, Peter.
Yes, so do I, yes. Now then, that brings us to that time in the show where we play a bit of music. And we were looking for some kind of theme. And the best that I could find was coconuts, because we had coconut cream in the medjool dates. No, it was lemon, wasn't it? Sorry, not lemon.
We had lemon in the kahawai.
Yeah, it's coconut we're talking about.
And the coconut cream in the medjool dates.
Yeah,
yes.
So anyway, I've selected Harry Nilsson and Lime in the Coconut.
Hmm. Sounds interesting, Peter.
Here we go. It's a rather jolly little tune.
Brother bought a coconut, he bought it for the dime. His sister had another one, she paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she called the doctor, woke him up and said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor, to relieve his bellyache. I said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowled up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowled up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowled up. Put the lime in the coconut, you called your doctor, woke him up, said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor, to relieve his bellyache. I said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor. Yeah!
There we are, Harry Nilsson with Lime and Coconut.
Very appropriate.
Very appropriate. All right, back to you, Gail.
Right, well, having our kahuai for our first course and went through, and these looked absolutely lovely, frangipani baked apples. And honestly, I love apples, and, you know, I do like baked ones too as well. I must tell the listeners, I got one good apple off my tree this year. The rest had codley moth, but I'm very good at, you know, trying to cut round that and shoo them. But I was down at the letterbox and I caught this glimpse of red. I thought, what's that? It was one apple on my tree, completely untouched by the bugs.
Well, if it's any consolation, I think we got our trees through the codling moth, but the birds are there now.
Oh.
Tomatoes, apples, they love them.
Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway, I picked it and it's in the fridge, and if anybody pinches it, I'm going to be mad because I'm trying it. It's my apple. But anyway, getting back to these, the rich frangipani, which is a mixture of butter, almonds and sugar. But in this, they're using the dried cherries, 100 grams actually, of dried cherries or coarsely chopped. But listen, you could use other fruits. I mean, cherries is what they sort of feel goes with this, with the mixture of the almonds and the sugar and the butter. But you could probably use hazelnuts or walnuts and figs. I mean, dried, any dried fruit really, to your liking if it works. So 100 grams of that, 150 ml of apple juice, or if you want to sort of put a bit of liqueur in there, so you could sort of do 100 ml of apple juice and maybe throw 50 ml of, you know, some sort of liqueur, 100 grams of butter softened, 40 grams of caster sugar, 2 teaspoons of flour, 1 egg, 1/4 teaspoon of vanilla, 125 grams of almond coarsely ground, and 6 large apples, and of course custard to serve. Well, when I think of baked apples, I immediately think of Granny Smith.
Got to be, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you cook with any other apple? Then
we can, I always sort of think baked apples and Granny Smith go together for some reason. I just think they're great.
Well, we've got Granny Smiths on a tree.
Oh, well, there you are. Well, you can do this, Peter, for a dessert one night.
All right.
Preheat the oven to 180 degrees Celsius. Place the cherries or what dried fruit you have got in a small saucepan with the apple juice or liqueur or apple juice liqueur, and place over a medium heat. Now simmer that for 5 minutes. Drain and reserve the liquid and cool. So make sure you've got, you're draining it over a bowl. Beat the butter and sugar until pale and creamy. And we know what that's like. It's got to be really pale, doesn't it? Peter's nodding his head. And basically we do, you know, we know then that it's correct. Mix in the flour, beat in the egg and the vanilla extract, then stir in the ground almonds and cherries. Now, using a sharp paring knife or apple corer, which I've actually got, is great for getting out the middle of the core. So using an apple corer, remove the core from the apples and scraping a little bit of extra apple, because you're going to be filling it. And I think when you're using an apple corer, which I do often, I usually put it down twice, you know, sort of just to make sure that I do get all that core and making the hole, you know, to fit the filling. So, and then cut a ring round the girth of the apple to prevent it splitting. So you're just actually just doing it, you know, you're not actually really cutting right through it. You're just going around it and just to stop it from, you know, bursting open.
Basically. That's a good tip.
It is a good tip. Mm. Yeah, just go around it and, you know, to cut that ring around. And place in a baking dish. Using a teaspoon, fill the centre of each apple with the frangipani mixture, heaping it on top too, because that's going to look nice. Squeeze it down through the hole in the apple that you've done with the corer, and then just make it sort of pile it on top. It'll look lovely. And then pour the the liquid that you've saved, the cherry liquid, around the base of the apples, along with 4 tablespoons of water. Now, you're baking these. Apples take quite a while. Bake it for 40 minutes until the apples are soft, and serve that with custard. Or, if it's me, I'd make sure I have some cream around too as well. And absolutely looks beautiful. And I'm going to show this to Peter, because that does look nice.
Oh, that looks, it does look nice. They look like a load of muffins from the top.
It does, yes, it does look like a load of muffins.
Totally, yeah. From the top.
But, you know, with that lovely, and of course they've used cherries, which the recipe states, and that's that beautiful sauce that you can see, that sort of like deep, deep red. And looks absolutely lovely. And you could probably spoon that over the top. Mmm, tastes good.
Does look nice. And I was interested where you say about taking it, remove the core, scraping a little extra apple out from the centre. Mm. Because people seem to do baked apples. And if all you do is take the core out, you don't get much.
No, you don't.
Do you?
No.
And I think they're terribly boring, yeah, baked apples. But these, you know, dig a bit more apple out.
Exactly.
And get,
yeah,
a bit more filling in.
And get a bit more filling in, because there's quite a bit of filling there. And look, you can see, I've just shown you, Peter, they've piled a little bit on top as well. So,
yes,
you know,
and it stayed there. It hasn't
it has
disappeared,
stayed there.
Has it?
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. So that's a nice, well, probably coming up to winter, but we're not talking really about winter. But it would make a lovely winter dessert anyway,
but
or any time.
It's coming up to Granny Smith time apples, isn't it?
Well, I'm just looking at the supermarkets and seeing a variety of reds, but I'll have to have a look next time I'm in.
Ours are not quite ready. They're,
oh,
they're sitting,
oh, okay,
sitting on the tree.
Oh, well, you will know that by having some.
If the birds are kind enough to leave a few for us, and they don't normally bother too much of Granny Smith, do they?
No, I'm just thinking, oh, gosh, that's really interesting about the birds. Well, I felt terrible yesterday. Well, I killed a butterfly. Sorry.
Well.
I was eating my broccoli and my other plants. And I felt bad.
Get a piece of stick, cut out a piece of white card, the shape of a butterfly, and put that out amongst your veggies, and it is reputed to keep them away. It
I've looks got like some a butterfly
cabbage.
Shapes.
It looks like a cabbage butterfly, but it's white. I don't know if it has to be white, but that's one of these little tricks that might work. I don't know. I've
I'm
heard
gonna
about
try
it.
That
and I think
because
we've tried that.
I'm going to try that because I've actually got some butterfly things that I put on cards and stuff like that, and I've got butterfly shape. So I'm going to try that. And see what happens, because I felt really bad about it.
You never know what you'll learn on this program.
I was there and I said, sorry. my broccoli, my plants are, you know, precious to me. Yeah. But anyway, getting away from that, and I'm sorry, listeners. Mini gingerbreads is our next little item on the list. And I love these because they're mini. And I haven't got a lot of mini loaf tins, but I have got a Friard tin, which you could say is almost a mini loaf tin. And it's got 8 holes in it, and it's a Friard, which is Friad, Peter.
Oh,
yeah,
what a new word.
And they are like little mini loaves, but I know what this recipe really is talking about, mini loaf tins. And I think I've got 2, but I decided that I'm going to make this, and it's going to be in the Friard tins. So it's mini gingerbreads, and this starts off with 125 grams of soft butter, 3/4 cup of packed brown sugar, 1 egg, 1 3/4 cups of plain flour, 2 teaspoons of cinnamon, 2 teaspoons of ground ginger, 1 1/4 teaspoons of baking soda, 2/3 cup of golden syrup, and 2/3 cup of boiling water. Now, the method here is preheat the oven to 170 fan bake and grease the mini loaf tins, if you're lucky enough to have them, or the Friard tin. Just grease them well.
What shape are they? Round?
No, they're square.
Oh, right.
The Friard tins, gotcha. Yeah, they are actually square. Like a small brick, I guess. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And there's 8 in a set. And so make sure you grease those well. And you could put a little bit of baking paper in the bottom just to be on the safe side. Now, what we're going to do is beat the butter and sugar until pale and fluffy, as we mentioned previous. Then add the egg and beat well. Sift together all the dry ingredients. Mix the golden syrup with boiling water. Add the wet and the dry ingredients alternately to the creamed mixture. So you're just having a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of this and a bit of that, and then until it all comes together. Now, what we do is fill the tins to 2/3 full. And if you've got any mixture over, well, I've got 8 in my set, so this will probably do that. And bake for 25 minutes or until inserted with a skewer comes out clean. Now, you can serve these with either butter, and I thought this was interesting, with a dish of yogurt. And it does make, if you've got those mini tins, 10 loaves. That's why I think the Friard tins with the 8, we might just scrape in there with this recipe. Yes. So very easy, Peter. And if you like gingerbread, this is a great one.
Yeah, and the cinnamon always goes well with ground ginger.
Mm. And they keep well.
Right.
And can be frozen, you know, if there are little separate ones. And, they can be frozen for a later time.
Very nice. Yeah, they sound good. Yeah. Mm.
So I think we're just about done there, Peter. I don't think I've got anything else planned in my little wee surprise book.
And I think time's ticking away.
Time's ticking away. Okay.
And we only pay you for half an hour. So.
We are joking.
We are joking.
But anyway, I think we're just about done there, Peter.
We are, Gail. Then that's nice selection again there. Mm. So we've got a nice main meal there and three sweets and things. Yeah.
So all get out your fishing lines.
Yes.
Whip down to the beach.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. Catch those kawai.
Nip down to the supermarket.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. You see Terakee?
Yeah, you do. I've never seen Karahai.
No, it's like you said. What does Claire call it? Give it to the neighbour's fish.
Yes, the neighbour's fish, mullet. Yeah.
Give it to the next door neighbours. Yeah. Well, I eat it, so there you are.
I'm sure it's very nice.
Yeah.
Gail, thank you very much. Another successful programme.
Yeah. And, good to be here.
Same time, same place next week?
For sure.
Right, we'll be here. Bye for now.
Bye.
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.